Sweet Sweet Garbage is a podcast in which two women, Jenna Redding and Bailey von Schneider, take a look back at some of their favorite garbage films and television. Knowing them as we do, we have to ask the question, why do they find themselves enamored with this trash? Not only that, why do we ourselves root for the problematic woman? We love a good crazy stalker, male or female. Why is Bailey okay with the idea of Penn Badgley stalking her? Why does Jenna want to single white female every person she meets? Can they be feminists and still enjoy these indulgences? Let's find out.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Sweet Sweet Garbage. We have a very special guest. We have Caitlin Durante from the Bechdel cast joining us to talk a little bit about Titanic. So thank you so much for joining us, Caitlin.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having me. And let me just say that it's extremely on brand for me to be talking on a podcast specifically about Titanic. So thank you for the opportunity for me to stay so on brand.
Yeah, it's very on brand for us too.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Like, we're surprised we haven't talked about it yet, actually. Yeah. Like, truthfully.
We've talked about, like, its impact a little bit, I think, in different episodes because, you know, we're always talking about, like, Jack Dawson and how he's, you know. He's just like the prototype of like every man.
Yeah, that we
want to pay attention to us. Yeah,
so true. But for the two people that haven't seen Titanic, Jenna will give a little synopsis about what it is.
Yes, and then also just like, if you haven't seen it, spoiler alert: the ship goes down. Oh, sorry.
Wait a minute.
Spoiler alert. But the synopsis is: a 17-year-old aristocrat falls in love with a kind but poor artist. Abroad the luxurious, ill-fated RMS Titanic.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very
straightforward synopsis of this movie. Yeah. A lot goes on in this movie.
Yeah, that's the thing, the runtime being as long as it is. I mean, when I first saw it at 8 years old, I ate up every moment of it. So I don't know if people agree with me on that. But
I remember when I saw it in the theater, there was an intermission.
You had an intermission?
Yeah, we had an intermission. It was like one of those, like, I mean, it wasn't like an actual old-timey like theater or anything like that, but there was like a 10-minute intermission halfway through.
I did not experience that in the theaters.
Oh, so you had like
I had to sit through the whole 3.5 hours of it. I don't know. Did you see? I assume you saw it, Caitlin, in theaters, right? Or
I saw it at a drive-in movie theater.
Wow.
In Pennsylvania in 1990. Actually, it was probably the spring of 98, because it, I think, premiered in like the Christmas season of 97.
Yes.
But it was in theaters for like months and months. It was like record breaking as far as how long it was in theater. So I didn't see it until springtime 98. I was 11 going on 12 at the time.
And like, what was your experience seeing it for the first time? Were you just completely blown away? Because I feel like I was, but that's also just me.
It was earth shattering.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my, this, I was like, this is cinema.
Right? Exactly.
I was just a 12-year-old kid, a complete dipshit. And I was like, this is cinema. So, yeah. And then that summer when it came out on the two VHS tapes, my sister and I watched it every day for an entire summer. Often twice a day.
Wow.
So we would watch both tapes, have to rewind both tapes, and then just start from the beginning.
Love that.
Yeah.
So that's a solid 6 hours of your day. That's a part-time job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nearing on a full-time job. Like,
yeah,
we were putting in our, like, 35 hours a week with this.
I love that, because I remember getting it on VHS and the two tapes. So the two tapes is the perfect intermission, really, because that is, you know, tape one, you can take a little bit of a break, pop in tape two, and then that's when it really starts to really crank up. But
yes,
I saw it as... I was 8 when it came out, and I remember my parents did the whole, like, we have to see it before her to make sure it's, like, appropriate. And then they saw it and thought it was appropriate. So that's my parents in a nutshell.
Cool. So, like, boob bare boobs and everything.
Yeah.
That's, bare boobs, those are dead bodies. Parents, I would say.
Yeah, I definitely, because like they were, my dad would have the eyes covered during the dead bodies and stuff like that.
See, but I think that's actually good parenting because like it's like they are shielding you from death a little bit. Like, you but, know, like, they don't want to really. Yeah, yeah. They're just like, it's a woman's boobs. Who
yeah,
cares?
They're like, you're going to grow into being a woman one day.
Yeah. You know, like, those will be on your chest
it,
at some
it
point.
It will happen at some point in your life. But for me, being like 8 years old, I too was like, this is cinema. This is one of the movies that I talk about how it's like really what I wanted to get into writing. Weirdly enough, at the beginning, I wanted to direct and I sort of transitioned into like, I want to write. Mm-hmm. But that was definitely the movie that I was just like, oh my God, how much... like how much detail went into it and things like that and the budget
the artistry
that it had.
I mean
oh
it's
I know.
Incredible down to the costuming I'm still in awe of.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean Rose's clothes in this movie are still to this day some of the most yeah. beautiful things I've ever seen.
Yeah, I feel so bad that I'm pretty sure she, like the rumor was she got, I don't think it was hypothermia, but people said it was either hypothermia or that she got some, like she got really, really sick because mm-hmm. She couldn't wear the wetsuit because of how beautiful the dress was and the wetsuit would have, you know, shown through, whereas oh. everybody else is in that freezing cold water. Obviously, it's not true Titanic cold, but it's very cold water.
Right.
And just the fact that it was like, oh no, we have to be like, sorry, you need to still look very pretty so we can't see your, you know, yeah. we can't see underneath.
Right.
Yeah. So it's interesting because with your podcast and the Bechdel cast, you really look at women in movies. And how do you feel? Because I think we've always felt about, you know, Rose being a very well-written character. And that's something that James Cameron, I always felt, you know, the idea of like, oh, can a man write a female character? I always felt that James Cameron was that type of a writer. And I was yeah. wondering, like, how you
well,
felt about
Well, if you think
Rose.
About just, like, yeah. some of his... other mm-hmm. characters as well, you know, like Sarah Connor is an incredibly well-written yeah. Female character. I think his take on Ripley in Aliens yeah. is a great character, and I felt like Rose, you know, Rose also has that. So yeah, Caitlin, what do you like? How do you
I
feel about that?
So many thoughts because on like James Cameron. And in regard to this, as well as just like Rose as a character and the whole, all right, where to begin? First of all, James Cameron, I do think he tends to be a man who writes women better than most
men
mm-hmm. do. Mm-hmm. So we'll applaud him for that.
Yeah, little golf clap.
Right. Keeping in mind that the bar is extremely low for
yeah,
that.
Sure.
And I do get annoyed by James Cameron continually patting himself on the back for how well he writes women. And it's like, first of all, there's not that much nuance that goes into your female characters. And secondly, don't draw attention to the fact that you're doing an amazing job. Don't pat yourself on the back. Just
yeah,
do
let
it.
Other people tell
right.
you how good you are.
So as far as Rose goes, I have really, my opinions have evolved over the years. So a little fun fact on the Bechdel cast, we have covered Titanic like 4 or 5 times. We've done 4 or 5 episodes on Titanic. Normally we only cover every movie just that one time, but my co-host and I love Titanic so much that we keep revisiting it. So on the first episode we did almost like 5 years ago, we were like, oh my God, Rose DeWitt Bucater, feminist icon, incredible, no notes, everything's great. And then after years and years of doing intersectional analysis on podcasts, or on the podcast and like of movies and just the treatment of women and any marginalized gender and the treatment of other things like race and class and sexuality and mental illness and things like that, I'm like, oh man, oopsies, Titanic maybe isn't as good as I thought it was. I can elaborate on that, but
yeah, please.
So as far as like, if you just isolate Rose, there's some things to love, but there's some things to be like, you are just kind of a spoiled rich white lady. But in the way that she, I like, for example, I appreciate that she has a lot more agency than most female characters have in a movie. Again, the bar is extremely low, but she does make active choices. She is participating in the you know, action of running through the ship as it's sinking and all of that stuff. Is Jack kind of dragging her along for a lot of it? Yes, but there are moments where, like, she rises to the occasion, she's taking charge, she does have to save him at some point. We talk a lot about, like, women being damseled and, like, having to be saved by a man, and that does happen here and there, but also it's this kind of mutual situation where she saves him. I like that she takes ownership over her sexuality, and she's, yes, like, Jack, you have sex with me now. Like, mm-hmm, put your hands on me. She initiates, yes, the sex in the awesome famous window slapping,
yes, sex iconic scene. Iconic moment in cinema.
Again, this is cinema. So I like that she, you know, she just takes ownership over her own desires. Meanwhile, Billy Zane is, like, begging her to have sex with him, and she's just like, no, 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 you're an asshole to me. I think that, like, suicidal ideation is treated very strangely in this movie, where Jack comes along and just cures her of her depression in the course of an evening.
He just took her dancing. That's all she needed.
Yeah. He's like, so you want to go to a real party? And now she's like, weehee, I'm better. So there's some strange things. I think that, again, for a movie directed by a rich white guy, the class commentary is, you know, could be worse. I appreciate that, but my opinions are kind of constantly changing and evolving. And because for a while I was like, Jack, wow, he's awesome. He loves her so much. He treats her well. He, like, helps her. He helps her find herself. And that's what I thought at first.
I remember when I figured this out the last time I watched Titanic, he never actually says, I love you.
No.
He says it, like, three times.
I love you, Jack.
Yeah.
And he's like, don't you say goodbye. He never says it.
It's actually valid. He never does say it.
And it's like, wow. And, like, I remember the first time when I first realized that, I was shaken to my core. Like, I think I walked around just, like, gay. I mean, sure, he's like, yeah, I don't know.
there's also that part where right after they've had sex, and presumably she has lost her virginity. I think that was her first time, right?
Yeah,
I think so, right. So she's like, Jack, when the boat docks, I'm getting off with you. And he's all like, this headcanon where he's like, this is just kind of a vacation fling for me, actually.
Yeah, now it's like, oh, you're going to be stuck with her. Definitely.
Because, like, the way he says, this is crazy, it seems like he's about to ghost.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, and I think, so either, my theory is if he hadn't died, he would, they might be together for, like, a couple weeks, and then they would realize they have nothing in common and their lifestyles are so different and there's nothing compatible about them that they would split up. Everyone who's like, wow, this is a romance for the ages, this is such a pure love story, I'm like, no, it's not. They just kind of use each other. Like, he's there to, like, be a manic pixie dream boy and, like, break her out of her shell. She just, like, needs to get away from her awful, like, suffocating mother and fiance, like, her abusive fiance, and they, like, serve each other's the purpose in each other's lives, and then they can part ways. I maintain that it is not a beautiful love story. It's horny young people who are attractive and near each other having sex on a cruise.
Yeah,
where there's just a bunch of old people. Like, we don't really barely see like any other young people. I feel like, I mean, he has Fabrizio, and he has like
the other friend.
They feel like it's the third class people are where their youth is, versus like you're either the child bride, like John Jacob Astor's like wife is, or you're Rose, and then everybody else seems to be
like 1,000 years old, or like the one, like the little girl that you see who's doing Cora. Like the tea party thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're right. Yes.
You know, where she sees herself.
She's folding her little napkin. Rose is like, I have to go kiss Jack. I can't end up like this.
I can't fold another napkin in my life. I'm done.
And I do love that it allows her, like this brief romance that does end tragically, but it allows her to open up herself. And then that's when she's allowed to completely separate herself from the society that she was born into and then create her own life, which is interesting. So it's like that catalyst to set her off.
Right. Which is, I guess, like kind of a version of like a man saving a woman. I don't hate it, but like, you know, I think that people misconstrue their connection, their brief connection on the ship for like this amazing romance. And it's like, no, he just sort of like helped her out of her shell, which I'm sure she would have figured out on her own eventually anyway. Or she would have just jumped off of the back of a ship into freezing cold water.
Honestly, though, I think like best case scenario of like how her life would have gone if Jack was never in the picture. Like, she just goes through this tragedy. She survives. Cal survives, like, presumably. In this scenario, they still probably would only have, like, another 12 years together, because it is canon. Like, she says that, like, when the crash happened,
he died. He does die.
And then, so, like, I think, like, yeah, I think if just, like, if Jack was never in the picture, then that would have happened. And then she's like, all right, well, now I'm going to go, like, ride horses on the Santa Monica pier.
The other thing about Jack that in more recent years has rubbed me the wrong way, and it probably took me so long to figure this out because I had just grown up with this movie for so long and
blinded by it.
Had been kind of gaslit into thinking, oh my God, what a beautiful romance. There are so many examples in the movie where Jack makes Rose do something that she is like physically or like just emotionally uncomfortable with, and he is so pushy. He's like, come on, do this, do that, blah blah blah, and she's like, no. There's a great scene where they go to the like lower decks party, and he's like, okay, we're gonna dance now, but you have to get closer to me. And he does not ask for permission. He just kind of like pulls her body into his. They start dancing around. She is saying no, I can't do this, no. It's like, how many, like, he just times, does not take no for an answer. Meanwhile, over in the other, you know, a few people away, Fabrizio and his little, like, Swedish girlfriend, he's like, is it okay if I put my hands here? And she's like, So Fabrizio, he's asking for consent. He's not violating her space or her boundaries. And so now I'm like, feminist icon Fabrizio, he's the one I'm rooting for. Jack sucks. He's pushy and he's like, I don't know, he just like doesn't take no for an answer. He doesn't respect boundaries.
Cockiness.
It's a weird entitlement, especially for a person that didn't grow up with wealth, that he still has this, like, I guess it's the white boy, you know, angle of things, just being like, well, I might be poor, but I can assimilate into high society, as we see him do, with ease, really, if he's wearing the right clothes.
Right.
Yeah, because he's charming. He's like, he's got charisma. He's cute.
Slick back hair.
Yeah, he looks real good with that slick back hair. I'll give baby Leo that.
I wonder, like, because we don't know anything about his backstory except for what he says. What if he's an unreliable narrator? What if he's a con man and he's just...
What if Rose's mom is right?
I just got the chills.
Be pretty good.
Especially because, like, Cal... He calls it, I mean, and Billy, I mean, first of all, Billy Zane's performance, amazing. Give him a million Oscars. Love Billy Zane. Obviously, his character is despicable, but.
Yes, but he's great at being despicable.
Oh, he's so good in that part.
Yeah.
his eyelashes. He's wearing so much eyeliner, question mark.
Yeah. And it's like the cheekbones. Oh, yeah. You could just...
If he weren't completely trash, that's not a bad man, at least look-wise, to spend your days with.
And, like, the fact that he was so rich helps, too.
Yeah, but sure. He's just terrible. Just a terrible person.
But even he says, like, when he frames Jack for stealing the diamond necklace, he's like, Rose is like, he couldn't have done that. I was with him the whole time. And Cal is like, it's easy enough for a professional. And it's like, he probably is a pro, like, pickpocketer or something.
Yeah, right. I don't know.
I'm just making things up now, but I like to establish my own head canon about.
Yeah, hey.
That's the thing you don't know, but one thing that I've always sort of wondered about the motivation of Cal throughout all this is that we see, I've always been of the person that says, while he is a despicable person, it's like, is there a part of him that does love Rose, or is it just more the control he wants over her? Because he does do these certain things even before he finds, like, oh, now she has the diamond, oh shit. But like, he's doing these things where he's like putting the coat on her, he's trying to get her away from him. So I'm like, is it more, does he have some iota of love, or is it mainly just the control he wants over her?
Right. I mean, I think he thinks he loves her. I think.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
it's his ideal.
Yeah. But like, as soon as she is not what he expects from her, he turns on her so quickly. And sure, yeah, I mean, at this point, it's like, it is like, oh, you're cheating on me with some dude. Like, I'm pissed about it. Yeah. Like, all right. Like, yeah. First of all,
you're also a terrible person.
But like, yeah, but I think it's his way of, it's, you know, she's like a possession for him. It's like, you know, they say, like, the dog with the bone sort of a thing. Like, I think he doesn't want anybody else touching his bone.
Right. Which, I mean, that is tragically how women were treated in that era. And it's like, okay, you're property. Thank you so much. Yeah. I mean, ideally, she ends up with neither of those men, which she obviously doesn't. But the fact that we are supposed to be rooting for her and Jack, this happens a lot where, like, if there's sort of a love triangle, or it's a woman who's already betrothed to a guy and a better guy comes along. Again, Jack is, like, not that great, at least in my humble opinion. But he's way better than Cal.
Oh, God, yes.
So, but it's like, okay, well, of course, like, anyone compared to Cal is going to seem awesome. But that doesn't mean this new guy is actually good. It just means that he's better than an emotionally and physically abusive asshole.
Right.
So,
yeah, I guess I'm always going to pick, like, the person who is potentially not going to hit me.
Yeah.
Like, when something goes wrong. Yeah.
Which is, like, it's such a trope in just, like, any, like, in romance movies in general that, you know, oh, the thing that's keeping them apart right now, it's a few things in the movie. It's, like, the class differences. It's the she's already betrothed. But it's such, it feels almost lazy to me now that I've seen it so much, that it's like, oh, well, isn't this new guy actually so much better than this abuser? And it's like, well, yes, but again, that does not make him a good guy. And so that he dies at the end, I have never shed a tear. I've never been even one iota of sad about that, because I was like, yeah, he
he served his purpose, like you said earlier.
Right. So, I have, as you can tell, I've thought a lot about this.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, the in-depth analysis of it. I mean, it is something just to think about, because, like, I was so clouded with, you know, like, I always talk about this was the sexual awakening as, like, Leo, all that.
Sure, fair.
So we get clouded by the idea of, like, oh, is he the perfect man? And then as you've shown us, like, it's, no, he was just kind of there, which is, like, an interesting way to look at it, actually.
Mm-hmm. He's just some guy. He's just some hot guy.
Yeah, very handsome gentleman.
a hot guy who takes a liking to her, doesn't necessarily treat her that well, is more interested in the idea of her than her as an actual person. He also like calls her a brat and stuff. He's like, you're the most spoiled brat I've ever met, but also you're the most amazing woman. I'm just like,
you just think I'm hot. Yeah,
that was like the one moment like where I felt in most of it was when he was trying to pursue her, because like a lot of these things like Jenna talked about, like he never says I love you, whereas that is like the closest to I love you in that moment where he like, and at that moment she had already said like I don't want this, so he's now mm-hmm. inserting himself back into her life and like doing the whole like I love you without saying I love you.
Right.
And it's like, ooh.
And again, that's him, like, cornering her. Like, he, like, brings her into this, like, abandoned, no, not abandoned, but it's, like, an empty gym, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, this guy's, like, a Blake on spring break. Like, he is,
he's like, come on, babe.
Let's hook up in the gym.
Like, this is all, we only got a couple more days before, you know, we get to New York. And then he does do those, like, you know, when he's dying, like, you know, winning that ticket was the best thing because it brought me to you. And it's
like, I mean, at that point, you're dying. Like, it's nice. Like, you just say as many nice things. Yeah. Still doesn't say I love you.
I know. Still doesn't really say doesn't. That. So what does that say about James Cameron?
I guess he's still just like he's being true to himself.
Yeah, James Cameron has been through a multitude of women. So maybe he's a Jack Dawson type.
That's true. Oh my gosh, I should fact check this before I say it, but I'm pretty sure that one of his wives is or was the woman who plays Old Rose's granddaughter.
100% yeah. Still is.
Oh, they're still married?
That's actually, okay. He's still married to her, but he was married to,
is it Linda Hamilton?
Yes, he was married to Linda Hamilton through filming Titanic, through the Academy Awards ceremony. Linda Hamilton's there, but then next thing you know, he's with the one that plays Lizzie, yes.
Wow.
Yes. And I'm pretty sure, I can fact check this, but I'm pretty sure they are still actually married, too.
Because he was also married.
This one worked for him.
He was married to Catherine Bigelow for a while,
yes.
Right?
Yes, he was.
Correct. So, okay, here's my thing, is I think he likes strong, independent women, but then also wants to be the star in, like, the relationship. Because think about this. Linda Hamilton, he's, you know, even though, like, they're technically, like, a power couple because she's Sarah Connor, or, you know, and he's the director, like, people are going to be like, oh, Linda Hamilton, this is so cool. Catherine Bigelow, like, a very successful director, like, mm-hmm. is her own entity without him. Whereas, like, and, like, the woman who plays Lizzie is a great actress. She was great in the movie. But, like, you know, she hasn't really done a lot of things outside, like, she's been in some things, but you know,
outside of him,
she is definitely the Mrs. James Cameron in this relationship. Yeah.
And they are still married. They got married in 2000, so they've been together for 22
so
years.
So she can handle his ego for sure.
Yeah, especially if, like you said, when you have like a Linda Hamilton who's pursuing something, or a Catherine Bigelow who's pursuing something. Maybe this woman just doesn't mind hanging back. And of course, I always say there's nothing wrong with whatever you choose to want to be as a woman. Maybe that fits her ideals of what she wants to be, but maybe James Cameron
I feel like we cracked something open on that one.
Like, who is James Cameron truly? Maybe you are Jack Dawson,
which is you know what.
But when your ages range from 8 to 12, though, I do totally understand being completely clouded by just Leo himself, you know.
I mean, I was as old as like 30 and still being like, woohoo, Jack Dawson, awesome, A+.
Yeah, right.
So
we had some unlearning to do for sure.
Another thing that I realized upon reading the script, I don't know if either of you have read the Titanic screenplay.
I've read some of it, but I haven't read it all.
It is so overwritten.
James Cameron
overwrites every scene he writes. So I would not recommend it as like
as a reading,
like as a reading exercise, unless you want to like see, oh, maybe I should not do this. But so Jamie Loftus, my co-host for the Bechdelcast, and I and a handful of other people did a live reading of the screenplay.
Ooh,
as like a fundraising
that's awesome.
event. And I played Jack.
Nice.
And I did not, it's not as noticeable when you're just watching the movie, I think, but when we are reading the script, he talks about himself so much, and he talks way, as far as like the exchange of dialogue goes between him and Rose, he's talking more frequently and almost always about himself and like not asking her questions or anything like that. It's especially noticeable on the scene when they're walking around the boat deck. She has thanked him for like saving her life and for his discretion, and then she hates him because she's like, you're rude, don't ask me about if I love my fiance or not. And then she's like also the scene where they meet is the worst scene in movie history. I absolutely hate the way that they meet, but that's neither here nor there. She's like, and then all of a sudden, very arbitrarily, she's like, what is this stupid thing you're carrying around? And then she grabs his art book and starts looking at it. Also, the drawings are not that great, but she's like, wow, you're an exquisite artist.
It's actually James Cameron.
Tooting his own horn once again. It's his drawings.
Not very good. So she's like, oh my God, you're the best artist I've ever seen. And then that's when they like start to hit it off or whatever.
Because they have art in common.
I am noticing that this whole movie is just James Cameron stroking his own ego, really. Mm-hmm. As we look deeper into it, because he is the person, to the point that like James Cameron's left-handed and he actually like shot through a mirror like to have it look like it's like a right-handed Leonardo doing all of the drawings.
That's James Cameron's hand
doing the drawing.
I mean, I will say that Rose picture is that like it's a pretty good one. I like that drawing.
The Rose one.
It's probably the best of them, but the other ones.
I mean, yeah, because the other ones you're kind of just like glancing through. Yeah. I mean, I guess like for her, she's like, wow, you know.
She's. I mean, also this is somebody who's like into Monet and things like that. So like the idea of like
she would know any actual artist. Like she'd be like, wow, somebody who like knows how to draw and you know.
Yeah,
it's probably if not as good.
Yeah, or the fact that she just has all of these. I do love it's like she's like I love art. And then it's like, well, at least these were cheap, you know, like Cal being like buying these these pieces of art that we know as just being these grand pieces of art. And like,
but are they so, but that's my thing. So are those supposed to be the originals or is she like, did she?
Because if so, they sunk. According to this movie.
Yeah. Right? Monet just had a bunch of art go missing because you bought them.
You bought it and it's now, like 2 miles.
At the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean?
Yeah.
It's like, no wonder you guys keep, like, going down there to get stuff.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's really just being, like, ruining these people's grave sites. But no, I really need to find that diamond.
Yeah, right?
Like, that's the whole thing.
Oh, my God,
of, like,
Bill Paxton.
Yeah, I love Bill Paxton, too. Rest in peace. But
yes, truly.
His character was just so determined to find this thing that it consumed him. And we were actually talking, I assume you've seen the alternate ending where it almost would ruin the entire movie.
No, no. I think if they had used that, there is no way that this movie would be as iconic as it is. I am 1,000%
sure. The cheesiest imagine. I'm surprised they even shot it
just about to be like it exists. Like it exists.
Like it's a fun thing to pull up at parties, but like other than that, it's like this is
her. And that's exactly the function it serves. My favorite part is when Bodine, like, she throws the necklace into the water in front of Bill Paxton.
Yes.
And then Bodine is like, that really sucks, lady.
Yeah. Or isn't that, like, the thing, too, where he's just a little, like, he's just like, let's jump her?
Like, or
something. He says something like that. I'm like, what? You're going to murder her.
You're like
she's 101.
Yeah. This 101-year-old lady who just wants to give this. Or the fact that just, like, having this with her in her possession for so many years could have just been not even an out for her in her life, but like an out for her grandchild. Just been like, you know what?
She could have sold that thing and put dozens of women through college.
Yes. Like, she could have done so many great things.
No, it's...
I also find that so infuriating.
No, it's incredibly infuriating.
Drives me. And just like the way she's like, when she throws it over.
Like, oh, All right.
Oops.
My story is done.
And it's like, oh, I can put the, like, and it's not even like that was something that, like, belonged to Jack. It's like, oh, I'm putting this back into the ocean to be with him because
yeah, no,
it was
makes no sense.
Yeah, it's just, like,
thematically it does not make sense because
I think he thought that that was going to be something that, like, would really hit. And now we think back on it and we're like, I don't know.
It does not. I'm like, such a rich person thing to do to just throw away. It was, like, worth tens of millions of dollars, right?
Yeah. There's a reason they were going to the extremes to find this.
It's like, just give it to Bill Paxton. Yeah. Let Bill Paxton realize that it's not what he wants anymore. And then, I don't know, give it to a museum or something.
Yeah, like,
That ending would have slapped. Like, I would love that. And then we still get her, like, asleep in her bed.
Yeah.
Dreaming and or dead.
Yeah.
And reuniting with Jack.
Here's my question. What do you think it is? Do you think she's asleep and having a dream? Or do you think she has died and, like, gone to an afterlife?
I have always assumed that she died just because every person that they, that the camera, like, points to, like, in her dream is someone who died.
Yeah, and it's
and then the time on the clock is also like the time the ship went down.
Mm.
So I'm just like I think she's like in heaven now.
I tend to agree just mainly of the idea of like, oh, you're gonna die an old lady warm in her bed.
And we see the life that she led. Yes. Which, you know, again, now that I'm thinking about it, a little problematic because it's all just things like Jack said she should try doing. So she did all of them.
Yeah,
which
all
is like fun.
Yeah, those fun things. But then I think the only thing of her own agency was becoming an actress. I think that's the only thing she took.
Right.
Oh yeah.
You're right. Everything else, like the beach with the
on the
roller coaster. Mm. I feel like, do you see her next to a plane?
Yeah.
He never told her to fly a plane.
Okay.
So
all right.
That
that's
was something
true.
She did.
Oh, yeah. She did a couple really cool. She's like,
I guess he never.
Cool
I guess he never would have like. He never like. Did they have planes back then? Well, no, it's 1912. There were probably planes, right?
When were the Wright brothers doing their shit?
That was like the 1800s. Remember. I believe we had planes at that point.
Because I was going to say, like, maybe he just didn't know
about
planes.
But not planes enough to, like, to the point where it's like, let's take a plane to New York. It was like, ooh, let's take this ocean liner. That was the thing to do then, especially if you were high society.
Yeah.
Right.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
What is your take on her moment?
So I am... I think maybe only 1% of people think that she is asleep and having a dream, but I will never in my damn life waver from this opinion that I'm almost positive is fact. And even though, yes, he says, you're going to die asleep, warm in her bed, an old lady, da-da-da. And it's kind of that you could argue is probably foreshadowing.
Mm.
However, let me pose some questions. One... why would her version of heaven be on the ship that she was on for a few days that sank and was probably a huge traumatic event for her?
You're not wrong.
Why is no other aspect of her life represented in this heaven? And it's just like the people she saw a few glimpses of, like 80 years ago.
Yeah,
84 years. It's been 84 years. Maybe that's just like, I don't know how heaven works. I don't, well, first of all, I don't believe in it, but let's say that it is a thing. Do you just like, the pearly gates, maybe this is her version of like entering the pearly gates, and maybe heaven will be other things. But I just am like, why would her version of heaven be on this ship where she met and had sex with a guy 84 years ago? And that was like kind of it, and then she lived another 84 years of her life, but where is that representation of her heaven? Also, I just think that it's not out of the realm of possibilities that she spent the past 2 days telling this story to Bill Paxton. Of course it's on her mind. Of course she'd be probably having a weird dream. She's conjured up all these memories. Yeah, she's gonna dream about it. So I maintain that it's a dream. And it's probably mostly because I don't believe in heaven or God.
Right.
And I'm just like, that's silly. But I think, to be fair, James Cameron's script is very ambiguous. He says she could be sleeping or it could be something else.
Oh, well, it's like a question mark.
Yeah. That feels very... Oh.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely, they're like, or something else. Yes.
Right. So it is ambiguous, and but I think most people do think that it is like her going to Titanic heaven.
Titanic heaven.
That she's just having a kooky dream, you know?
I like that, though. I do appreciate that.
It makes sense.
Well, because it does.
Especially in the idea of talking about the most traumatic event she's ever gone through in her entire life. Mm-hmm. Why would you want to be back in the... Even though, like, in the moment she's back into, the Titanic is fully constructed and everybody's so happy. But still, mm-hmm. it is this event that wrecked you, really.
Well, it's like what you... Like, it does... it minimizes her life, if you think about it that way, for sure. I mean, and I think that's why it tries to have it both ways, because he does very specifically show the pictures, the photographs of, like, her life, so that they can end on the image of her in her past, whether it's a dream or not. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
And it's just wild to believe that... Sure, we've spent like 3 hours watching them fall in love, but it's still crazy that like she went on and had a successful life where she married this man, had children, now she has this grandchild. Mm-hmm. But then
imagine her dead husband, yeah. who is presumably dead, is he also in Titanic heaven, and is he going to be pissed?
Yeah, it's like she seemed to have lived this fulfilling life, and are we supposed to believe that Jack was the true love of her life, so like when she goes to her reward, you know, that her reward is Jack?
It's kind of, well, she's in white. It looks like they're about to do like a heaven wedding.
Titanic heaven wedding. Oh my God, if I ever get married, that will maybe be the theme of my wedding.
Titanic heaven wedding.
Yeah.
Like, not the Titanic itself. Nope.
The heaven moment.
Titanic heaven wedding. Yeah. For me, it would be Titanic dream wedding.
Yes. So that it's more secular. I understand.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. You're not alienating anyone that comes to your wedding.
Precisely.
But all right. Well, I was gonna ask this question because I thought. Well, I don't know if there's like a way to really do it, because I wanted to be like, who is Team Jack and who's Team Cal But now I think I've like talked me out of both of them.
Yeah. Right. No. Rose.
How about
one out.
Okay? Let me pose a few different other options.
Yes.
Fabrizio.
Yes, Team Fabrizio for sure.
I think it would be cool if she had a little romance, if she's going to have like an inter-class romance. Why not she kisses her maid Trudy?
Oh, Trudy. Okay. I would definitely be down with that. Team
Poor Trudy got a hot for
I know. Trudy's cute. She could be kissing Trudy. There's also the Irish man, Tommy Ryan.
Yes, Tommy Ryan. Very Irish name. I love it. We're really going into them.
he doesn't seem to link up with anybody. No.
Although he does seem to have a very like hot temper. Although when he does seem like he's really mad, it's because like everything's going wrong. So like I do give it to him. But like
I think that Jack has a hotter temper than Tommy Ryan. Remember that scene where he's like grabbing? He's like, "God damn son of a bitch!"
Yeah. He's shaking it,
punching people. He's rattling cages.
And when they're ripping it, they're ripping the
thing. That was Jack's idea. Yeah. Like,
and they just rip it straight from the wall.
It's a testosterone.
They get their Hulk strength in that moment.
It's crazy.
Or he hulked out in a few moments, especially when one of my favorite lines in this entire thing is when they bust through that like door and the guy's like, "That's White Star Line property. You'll have to pay for that." And they're like, "Shut up." With the idea of like this, everything's going to shit, but oh, you're gonna have to pay for that door you just broke down.
Well, that's what I love. I do love like those moments of humor when like the ship is going down, when like the first class people are still clinging to like their you know, like the etiquette of certain things, like, you know, having
the band in our best.
Yeah. But like the band's still playing until basically like everything, and like that is done chilling. like it's supposed to be like kind of like a romantic thing that this band did, but I'm just like, this is horrific.
Why? Yeah, like the sense of propriety people had back then, and like it just goes against any survival instinct you would have.
Right.
I'm just like, oh, these It must have been so exhausting to like have to be a all proper,
right?
Just yeah.
Like the one guy yeah. that they were like, "Sir, here is this vest." It's like, "Oh no, we're dressed in our best and we're prepared to go down like gentlemen." It's like, "Oh my god,
like, what are you talking about?" That's why. But then, like, when that guy actually like sees the water like rushing towards them, yeah, and like he's like, that
"Oh,
look.
I've made a huge mistake."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm a dummy. What did I do?
Yeah, and something that I always like. I found it, like, the idea of women and children first. For women being, like, not necessarily, like, second class to them, but it's the idea of, like, we're the ones that procreate, so we need life to go on. So this is why we're saving you. And then, of course, is the innocence of children. But it's, mm-hmm. like, I've always, like, you know, the idea of, like, and it, there is that moment where it was, like, you know, he's trying to pay off to get, you know, Cal, because Cal is... just he's yeah. trying to pay off, and it's like your money can't save you any more than it can save me. And in that moment, it's like the class is really stripped, that you did have high society men dying there, like John Jacob Astor at that point, richest man in the world, died on the Titanic.
Yeah,
so mm-hmm. it's interesting that in that moment of everybody was almost on the same playing field when it came to that.
Right. But I think it's because they had this, like, also this romanticized notion of masculinity. Mm. Because, like, it's, like, these men being like, oh, we're gonna go down, like, yeah, gentlemen. We're gonna take our deaths like a man.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you talking about?
It's
like, sure, like, yeah, I mean, it's noble, I guess, but, like, I'm not gonna give you a pat on the back.
Yeah,
right. And, like, the idea of, oh, we save women and children first. I don't know exactly the logic behind that at the time, or if it's changed, or if people, if there are even still accidents like that where they need to be like, women and children first.
Yeah.
But I think, like what you said, it's this idea that women were valued for really the only thing that women were valued for at that time, which is them as baby-making
yeah.
vessels.
Yes.
So it's like, let's get your uterus onto this
yeah.
lifeboat
yeah.
so that you can perpetuate the species, because that's really all we see you as, is a life, like a child-rearing object.
Right.
Yeah, very true.
So,
and I
that's
think
cool.
That, yeah, yeah.
So cool.
And I think that's
so awesome, actually.
Yeah, I think that proved in the moment where it was like, oh, there's John Jacob Astor and his, like, literally at that time, 17-year-old wife, and how she was in, there's, like, oh, she's in a delicate condition. It's like these mm-hmm. men marry these 17-year-olds because they're ready to pop out babies because mm-hmm. they're very viable, and it's disgusting to think about. Because that yeah. was like a 50-year-old man.
Like, he's... yeah, Mr. Young and Restless, super old. Also, okay, here's another thing that it didn't occur to me until very recently, but Rose is a 17-year-old
yeah.
teenager, canonically in the story.
Yep.
Kate Winslet was, I think, 22.
Yeah, 21. I think they were, like, 21, 20. I think DiCaprio was, like, 23, which is still crazy that at, like, 21 years old she commanded the screen like that. But anyways, yes.
I mean, the skill.
Incredible.
The point is, though, that this movie normalizes seeing a teen nude body
yeah,
on screen.
Very
I'm sure there
point.
Are people who would make you right. I'm sure there are people who would like make the argument that, oh well, you know, whatever, like the age of consent and stuff like that was not even a thing
then,
back
yeah.
then.
Right.
But I still would say that movies shouldn't have characters who are teenagers be nude on screen. That's a wild take.
Yeah, wow.
No, I know, exactly.
Whoa.
It's crazy.
So that's messed up. And I'm just like, why wouldn't you, like, age her up a little bit, make her, like, 19, 20, whatever, like, just so that we're not having a teenager naked on screen.
Yeah.
So that's just a thought.
No, it's true.
It's like, it's something I actually really never thought about, but now that you say it, I'm like, oh, God, this is kind of gross.
Yeah.
It's kind of pretty gross.
It really is. Or that scene in and of itself, how this whole movie as a whole was able to get a PG-13. Like, the nudity isn't gratuitous at by mm-hmm. any stretch of the imagination, and it is done, quote-unquote, for the idea of art. Even
right.
though
it's
really...
tasteful.
Yeah. But I still find that, like, it passed with a PG-13.
Yeah.
With quite a bit of nudity, and there's not too much sex, and then there is that end. I mean, when that ship goes down, things start to get very dreary.
Some of those deaths, like when you see like the frozen bodies, like that stuff is like, well, but to me, like, I feel like that's more
traumatizing.
Like, yeah, I mean, again, like I would prefer, like, I do feel that way about like not having teenagers. Cause like that's my whole issue with Euphoria. I'm like, if you wanted me to look at Sydney Sweeney with her shirt off, make her like a 20-year-old on the show. Don't make me feel like a creep.
Yeah. Yeah. People don't talk about this enough. Euphoria is very fucked up.
Oh, it's Euphoria, so but like it's also like, no, because it's got a very talented cast and I think it coasts on that, but like it's a very dumb show.
Yeah,
it's also at its core, you strip it of like the sex and like the Molly, it's just Dawson's Creek.
Yeah,
like like give me your like your yeah. your issue of the day, but like, you know, you got these like girls with their shirts off and like glitter on their
so
face
so much, and that show just goes so much for like a shock factor,
yeah,
with like a nudity where you're taken out of it. But yeah, that is such a, it's something I never really thought of, the idea of like her actually being,
yeah, I mean, I do think like old. What I do appreciate about it though, and like it's a little fucked up, is that like she does it just to piss Cal off, and like I can get behind that 1,000%. Mm-hmm. That's hilarious.
Yeah, like the little note she writes, she leaves it specifically in.
Yeah. Oh, to keep me locked up with your other treasures. Like, yeah. Come on, what a mm-hmm. line.
That's, I, you know, spite is spite, delicious is like that.
Yeah, it's a dish best served cold.
Yeah, yeah, for, yeah, definitely. But yeah, no, woo.
And like he almost, like he gets so mad, he almost tears it up.
Yeah, and then he's like,
he does it. He like pulls himself together.
Yeah, it's like, oh no, no. And then at the when he has that line, oh, it'll be a lot more valuable in the morning, you know.
Right. And then she says, "You unimaginable bastard," and she spits in his face.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Man. Like there are those moments where she does take agency that I just absolutely love. But there are moments where I get so mad at her. I'm like, if you had just stayed on that little boat, you would have seen each other on the Carpathia later, maybe. But no.
Mm. Or he would have yeah. ghosted.
Yeah, yeah.
He would have done to her what he does to Cal. Even though like there is a deleted scene where like she and Cal have a final conversation. Mm. But in the theatrical Ooh. Cut. Yeah. Mm. In the theatrical cut, she just hides from him.
I like that. I like the idea of hiding from him. So, and that really goes back to the idea of like he's like looking for her, but at this moment, is he looking for her or does he want that damn diamond?
Well, yeah, no, I think that's probably why they cut the scene, because it's not like he just talks to her for a little bit and then she leaves. Mm-hmm. And then like they never talk again. So like I think they were like, well, it doesn't explain why he wasn't like, okay, can I get my diamond back now?
Yeah, can I get that diamond back?
Yeah, okay.
Oh my god, that part when he's like, I put the diamond in the coat. And I put the coat on her.
And I put the coat
and
on
how
her.
Did that diamond never fall out of that pocket?
That is great, a heavy question. Ass. That's
deep, a heavy ass. Deep pockets, deep pockets on that jacket.
Yeah.
Also that, like, I think people have been like debunking certain things. Like obviously there's the whole idea of like, would they both fit on the door?
They would.
Oh, I'm so tired of that conversation.
There's a new one that I saw that it was like, she would have died based on how heavy that jacket was and how full of water it was, that even like outside of the water, she's still draped in that thing, and that thing would have like still, she would have probably potentially have died anyway.
Like hypothermia?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Because of what she was wearing in that moment, you know?
Also, she wouldn't have been able to move. Like, that wool coat,
yeah, no, it
like, absorbing
very
all that water, like, it would have been impossible to, like, swim around or move at all.
Right. To just literally get sucked down with the Titanic and for that thing to not have just plopped out, I find to be the most amazing part of this whole movie.
Or there's that, but then also I've always had the question, because, like, again, it's canon that this necklace is, you know, pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a big rock.
Yeah, it's like the whole chest.
So why didn't Jack feel it when they slipped it into his pocket?
That's also a good point too.
Yeah, you would have sensed that like drop, like the heavy thing dropping
you're
by
like,
your
what was
side.
That?
Yeah, you were like, yeah, guy, you're really close to me, and I didn't feel anything.
Yeah, yeah, he kind of like slips it in there, yeah. And then it's like it's good. We're solid.
Yep. Yeah. These are all great logistical questions.
Right. I have so many. Like, those are the big questions that I ponder when watching them. But, you know, at first, as we said, when we were younger, this was cinema. And we still love it, of course.
Oh, no. And I'll still probably watch it another, like, 15 more times in my life. And that's a conservative number.
I watch it like once a month.
No, it's a conservative number, yeah.
Like, and it's normally I'm a kind of person that's like, I like a good 90 minutes. You get in, you get out, and you tell your story with this.
Same.
Perfection.
I think it should be 3 hours and 14 minutes longer.
Right? Yeah.
Here's the thing. Here is the thing. Is that, like, all the problems that it has with story, all of the, like, pretty thin, like, character development stuff. The thing is, this movie has immaculate vibes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you just want to hang out. You want to hang out.
It's visually stunning.
So beautiful.
And still holds up really well.
The practical effects. Because it's a lot of practical stuff.
Yep,
and they hold up. And it's... Honestly, I can skip the first VHS. I'm just like, them, you know, falling in love, blah blah, boring, whatever. Get to the exciting stuff, which is
like, and that part's done so well. And like, yeah, and like you said, it's because they did a lot of practical effects. He like pretty much built an entire side of the Titanic, which is why it holds up as well as it does. Like, you'll notice there's certain like CGIs that look bad, but like, come on, it's also 1997. But
like, for the most part, there's not a thing I can really think of that like sticks out to me as like a bad thing that happens.
It looks great for the most part.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So what we do on this is we have what we call our batshit moment, where it's just a moment that it can be a favorite, it could be something that completely takes you out of it, but just like a moment in a film that you're just like kind of are like, whoa. So was there that sort of a moment for you at all within Titanic?
I guess it would be the scene where they meet. I alluded to this before, but it defies all logic. It's the acting on both of their parts is atrocious. Visually, it looks like shit. I feel like I could go outside right now and film the same thing and it would look like as good or better. The lighting choices are weird. The cinematography is really weird in that scene. Just the context of everything, her like being suicidal, he saves her, and then like that being how they meet. Like, why did they have to meet that way? That's such a weird, there's now so much like weird like baggage related to that, especially if you like analyze it from like a mental health
standpoint
lens. It's just like very bizarre. And so every time I watch that, I'm just like, that's how this why I hate
this
it.
This is the beginning of the iconic love story we've all been taught. Yeah.
Weird meet cute.
Yeah, like, it really
the
is.
The fucking worst meet cute I've ever seen. And then it's made even worse where... So that's, you know, I was talking about where they're walking around the boat deck and, you know, he's yammering on about himself. He asks her not a single question except, do you love your fiance? Because if there's a chance that you don't, maybe now I can have sex with you. It's really the motive behind that question, I'm pretty sure. So, but otherwise, he's just like yammering on about himself. He doesn't care to ask her anything about herself. She's like, oh my God, Jack, I see your art. You see people. You really do. And he's like, I see you. She's like, and then he says, you wouldn't have jumped. Like, why are you bullying her?
True. If you think about like the context of of him saying that.
You're right. It is such a strange way to meet. Oh, also, the logistics of all of that is like she has a full on like 10-minute conversation with him as she's hanging off the back of this boat, and like she does slip, and there is that dramatic moment. But like, what? Like, come? Like, I don't know.
It's like, first of all, it would have been so cold. Just her exposed hands would not have allowed her to like grip on for very long. But yeah, they're just like chatting.
Having
and it's
a
really,
good time.
He's telling about his life. Like, hey,
he's trying to mansplain. He's mansplaining ice fishing to her.
At least I know what ice fishing is. Like, I've got bigger things to fry right now. Like, bigger things to deal with.
Right. Where is the sense of urgency? So that scene absolutely sucks. And that's always the the scene where I'm just like, what?
Like, what are you doing, Titanic? Again, like, that comes maybe from, like, the idea of this, like, white savior thing. Like, well, like, this, like,
well, white knight.
Like, well, yeah, the white knight coming in and just saving you. And, yeah, the idea of, like, oh, I fixed all of your problems.
Yeah, it's actually surprising that he doesn't spend the rest of the movie, like, treating her like a fragile, like a China doll or something. Mm. Like, that he's not like, well, you did almost jump. Mm.
Yeah, even though he's, like, talks about how tough she is, and it's like, well, she had this moment of, like, fragility where she was ready to end her life.
And like, you've just kind of been, like, negging her the whole time.
Wait, are you going to, like, check in with her to be like, are you okay?
You okay?
Like, it's like, we met. And Anna's dad, yeah, he's just like, so I lived in France, and I worked on steamboats, and da-da-da-da-da. It's like, who cares about
and
your
And I draw prostitutes. Look at this one with this weird vagina. Yeah. Like, I'm going to turn it this way so you can tell.
Oh, that was such an awkward moment. And, like, her, she's like, oh.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
She's looking at it, you're like, oh,
well,
okay.
She's probably never seen one before. Like, she's never looked at her own.
Yeah, poor girl. At least she got that moment at the end of her hand.
I don't know. She had that mirror.
Yeah, she could have looked there, and that's true. That's true. She had a couple of mirrors.
Yeah, she really did.
But she's always being like corseted in by either Trudy or her mother. There's not like a lot of, you know, one-on-one time.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Those women.
I wish her and Molly Brown had been friends, more friends.
Give me some scenes,
like,
with those two. Yeah. That would have been great.
Right, Molly Brown is, like, about to advocate for her when Cal is all like, you like lamb, right, sweet pea? And Molly Brown's like, who, like, are you gonna cut her food for her too?
Yeah,
like,
see, that's great.
No, it seemed like she was, like, ready
to,
like, rally.
An actual feminist icon. Yeah. Real life Molly
Brown. And just
Brown.
Being the woman that's, like, comes in and just, like, wreaks havoc, but in, like, the best way. Yeah. And then, oh my God, Kathy Bates was just so good.
It was great.
Instead, she ends up helping Jack.
Yeah.
She's like, I'll take you under my wing and put you in this tuxedo so you can cosplay as a rich person.
Yeah, exactly, because this is the only way you're gonna fit in. I love when she's like, oh, what are you gonna wear, and he's like, and she's like, oh,
that's
God.
What I thought.
Like, because she knows what it's like to have been poor, and now what it's like, because she's treated and looked down upon.
Yeah, they still treat her like
new
shit.
New money. Yes. Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, and that's such a funny thing, and like this idea that like new money is like less only than. Just one step like above being poor.
Yeah.
Like there's still like this faction.
Yeah. That was like born into all of this wealth. And like I really like the when we see Rose's mom and how terrified she is because we learn that the father left them with nothing except for a good name.
Yeah.
And that name is getting her in with, you know,
it's the only card we have to play.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're just like, oh, I just wonder, like, I don't care about Rose's mom, but I wonder where she ended up. Because she has nothing.
Why is she not in Titanic heaven?
Yeah, her mom like genuinely loved her, like was pushing her into these things, but that was also the society and what all
she probably
knew.
I mean, like, I think like she probably just ended up like they have that line where she's like, do you want to see me as a seamstress?
Yeah.
And like, I feel like that's like what
she ended up doing because we
know because like, yeah, I don't know that like I don't know what like what a widow's cards would be, like someone who is of that age.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't really think, like, I think maybe she could remarry, but
yeah.
We don't know.
It's,
we never find out.
It's unlikely because all these rich dudes are marrying 17-year-olds.
Yeah, that's so, why her card was that she had this viable 17-year-old.
Yeah, she had a 17-year-old. That was she had
her that was her ticket.
That was her access to wealth.
Yeah.
And that's why, like you said, it's like the cultural context of, you know, women being valued for their bodies and ability to reproduce and have sex with. So she's like, all right, I'm just going to kind of pimp out my daughter to Cal Hockley and hope that works.
Yep. All that Pittsburgh steel helps.
Upsetting.
Exactly. Which, funnily enough, that is of what, like, Rooney Mara and Kate Mara.
Oh, yeah.
They're from, like, Pittsburgh steel tycoons.
Really?
Yeah, their parents
own the Steelers, and then her other, like, her mom is, like, heir to the Steelers, and her father is heir to the New York Giants. So we're talking,
like, old money.
Lots of money.
I get so mad every time I find out that, like, a famous person is just like from this like legacy wealth, and it's like, okay, well, it's like that's why you're famous.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both talented.
Yeah,
and
they're
I like
both
them
really good, so you get less upset about it. But you're like, oh damn, you'd be fine. It's like Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You would have been fine if you didn't decide to become an actress. You
know? Right.
Yeah, your life still would have been very like successful, but yeah.
Right.
And then what we tend to do is we end the episode with we have our garbage meter, and we go from like sweet, sweet garbage to pretty much a hot garbage scale and like where it falls in between. And sometimes we can be off the garbage meter if we do a movie that we genuinely love or we don't consider, and like we're talking multi Academy Awards, but at the same time, what does an Academy Award mean? Like that, you know, but it's supposed to be prestige.
Yeah, but then, and also sweet garbage is like, it's like that, it's like that just a good trashy time, whereas like hot garbage is like, it's like, oh, this was like bad.
Yeah,
this is not
steaming
good.
It was like Thanks Killing seems to be the one that we go back to.
Almost killed us.
I really did.
Wow, I need to watch it. I have not seen Thanksgiving.
I don't think you do. I don't think it literally almost ruined us. Yeah. I think we like did. We took a hiatus.
We took a break
from the podcast for a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, here I would rate this. Sweet, sweet, recyclable plastic bottle.
Oh, all right.
It's recyclable, and that you can keep rewatching it, and you don't necessarily even have to feel that bad about watching it over and over. There are some movies that I still love that are so deeply problematic that I feel bad.
I feel guilty when I rewatch it.
But this one, you know, the recyclability of it makes it so it's like a little less guilty. But it's also plastic, and we shouldn't be, you know, single use plastics fucked up. So you know, there's enough of that in Titanic that it's plastic, but it is recyclable, and it is sweet, sweet.
Yes.
Love
that.
That's actually maybe the perfect way to put it. Like, I love
that.
Thank
you so much.
Yeah.
I love that. That's a great way to put it. Yeah.
I know, yeah. It makes me feel like, it makes me feel good about myself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, yeah, so it's great. Well, so thank you so, so much for coming on and talking with us.
Yes, this was great.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. So
do you have anything that you'd like to plug? We know about your podcast, but if there's anything else, obviously, like, throw it at us.
Sure. Yeah, you can check out the Bechdel cast. Again, we've done multiple episodes on Titanic, although most of them are on our Patreon, so they are behind the paywall. Mm. So just subscribe to our Patreon.
Yeah,
there you go.
And I teach screenwriting classes. If you want to check out my website, caitlindurante.com. I'm also a comedian, so I do stand-up comedy shows here and there. And all that info is on my website. So, and yeah, Twitter, Instagram, at caitlindurante.
Cool. Great. Thank you so much. Yeah. This was great.
We really appreciate it.
Thank you. I've had the time of my life. I'm going to go to sleep and have a wonderful dream about this.
You're going
to
have a Titanic dream, not a Titanic heaven scenario. Yeah.
Yes. I will not be dying tonight.
Right, right, right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Sweet, sweet.